Fast Am I. Good evening, and welcome to this week's episode of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. On the programme tonight, an NGO calls on the Manx government to ban Saudi pilots from using Ronaldsway Airport for training exercises and is backed by a local charity. We hear from the One World Centre and the Celtic League. A councillor is concerned there's not enough people recycling, and an MHK explains her experience of standing for elections in Douglas at both local and national level. An NGO has revealed pilots in the Royal Saudi Air Force use Ronaldsway Airport as part of their training by the UK military. The Celtic League has published a letter by the Ministry of Defence which confirms it's one of many local airfields used by personnel at the RAF Valley Air Base on Anglesey in Wales. According to the United Nations, airstrikes by a Saudi-led coalition in the Yemeni civil war have resulted in the deaths of more than 4,500 civilians. Bernard Moffat of the Celtic League is calling for the Manx government to prohibit pilots from the Gulf state from training here. He spoke to me.
The MOD through the Air Command Secretariat has now confirmed that a number of personnel have trained at Air Valley from the Royal Saudi Air Force. It's not the only base they use, but certainly a number have trained there. The training schedule, which includes the use of Ronaldsway for non-touchdown approach and takeoffs, is utilised by all the foreign air forces that have training agreements with the RAF. In fact, they confirm that not only Ronaldsway but other airports around Wales and the northwest are involved as well. I was aware of Liverpool, but this expands it a bit. It's interesting because previously, when we've tackled the MOD over issues like this some while ago over a completely unrelated issue, they wouldn't give that information. So there's a degree more openness, and it was a fairly prompt response.
And do you believe that some of these pilots from the Saudi military, is it safe to say they will have been involved in some way in these horrible scenes we're seeing in the Yemeni civil war? Can you make that assertion?
Well, absolutely, because the personnel who'll go to the likes of Valley and for air training under the Saudi UK defence agreement will be the top guns, if I can use an American term. So these will be leading personnel. And not only that, they'll go back and train other personnel as well. The correlation between the bombing campaign, which has gone on now for almost 3 years, and the Saudis, Valley and Ronaldsway is now linked, as far as I'm concerned.
How does this make you feel? You know, this armed conflict, we've seen some, you just have to look, type it in online, there's some horrendous scenes and a lot of unlawful action being taken militarily there. How does it make you feel to think that we might be somehow involved?
Well, I find it absolutely appalling, to be perfectly honest. And whilst I'm an anti-militarist, and obviously the League's position and nationalist, indeed, there was a resolution at the McFadden AGM recently, is one of opposition to the military. This is more a humanitarian matter. And you have to ask, at a time that the Manx government making statements about saving the globe, if you like, there's a global emergency, a climate emergency and so on, that we don't have the same kind of broad outlook towards humanitarian issues. There's a conflict in Yemen, and I'm not taking a side in it, except to say that I don't see why an external country should be involved in it. But I think it's appalling that as part of that conflict, there's the deliberate targeting of civilians, and particularly children. And if you've seen some of the footage, most of which is too strong to be broadcast by Western media, but I've seen some of it, off the damage that's been done and the deaths and injuries, particularly horrendous injuries to children. Why the Manx government don't take a stand on this, I don't know. And it's absolute rubbish what the Chief Minister said in his recent statement to me, that they couldn't differentiate. I know a bit about the RAF, and I'm fairly certain that the Saudis wouldn't be using RAF Valley if they didn't value it as a training facility. It'll have a well-honed programme, and therefore the Manx government would simply have to say, we don't want to have any of the Saudis or their allies from the other Gulf states that are using Saudi utilising facilities in the Isle of Man. And I'm sure the UK government would comply with that.
Where do you draw the line if you start to ban one military, then maybe if you draw the line you want to ban another military that's involved in another conflict that you don't agree with? Would it not be simpler to ban military use of the civil airport on the island?
Personally, I would like to see a complete ban on military activity in the Celtic countries, and that's our raison d'etre, if you like. But I'm talking here now about a humanitarian issue which is right in front of us. Touch wood, there is a ceasefire now in Yemen, but that's very fragile. And if that ceasefire breaks, again, civilians will be targeted. So I think if the Manx government, the Chief Minister made a comment in his letter to me about wanting to honour the defence arrangement they have with the UK, if they want to maintain that link with the UK, well, fair enough, let them crack on and do it. For RAF personnel who are training and utilising the facility here, but certainly not for foreign powers, and certainly not foreign powers who knows, in a generation or so, may be pitched against you. I think it's an absurd situation, to be perfectly honest, that the Manx government cannot take a sovereign decision in relation to this. And by the way, although the Chief Minister has been mentioned several times, I'm not focusing in on the Chief Minister. There's a Council of Ministers there. They've got collective responsibility. Ray Harmer is the Minister for the Department for Infrastructure, which is responsible for the airport. I don't know about Ray's personal circumstances. He's probably a family man. He's probably got children like myself. You put yourself in the position of families in Yemen that have lost children and had them horribly mutilated in this conflict. And I think it puts into perspective what exactly is going on. I don't wear that to earn a few bob from the use of Ronald's Way and train the air traffic controllers. We should contemplate supporting, in even the most minor way, what's going on in that country at the present time.
But if the Manx government decided to challenge the use of the airport by the Saudi pilots training in RAF Valley, would it not invoke, as we've seen with other issues of constitution, some kind of controversy over the island's status, its sovereignty, and there would be subsequent conversations about that?
Absolutely not. The position is that in relation to defence matters, the United Kingdom is responsible for the defence of the island. And for that, the Isle of Man government pays a levy every year for what's called defence and common purposes or services. But there's a more interesting point here. Don't remember the exact date, but specifically in about 1982, the United Kingdom government made it clear that the operation by military aircraft over the Isle of Man is prohibited below a height of 2,000 feet. Now, the UK government took that position at the time the Derby Sea Bombing Range was in operation. The only area that is precluded from that particular covenant, if you like, is the controlled area around Ronald's Way. And the control of the area around Ronald's Way is vested in the Department of Infrastructure through the airport and through its air traffic control.
So they do have the power.
Of course they have, yeah. And it wouldn't be it wouldn't stop the war in Yemen, but it would send a symbolic message to the international community that the Isle of Man government takes seriously breaches of international law, which is what is going on at the present time in Yemen.
Bernard Moffat of the Celtic League. Well, as we heard, the Chief Minister, who refused to be interviewed on this issue, has written to Mr. Moffat to say matters of defence and international relations fall outside the Manx government's remit. Well, the revelation has left a local charity which had raised funds on the island for the Disasters Emergency Committee Yemen Appeal highly disturbed. Those were the words of Phil Crane, who's the chairman of the One World Centre. I spoke to him.
I think this revelation is highly disturbing. To think that Saudi pilots can be training one day down at Ronald's Way and then the following week putting that training into practice by dropping bombs on innocent Yemeni civilians. The war crimes by both sides are well documented by the UN. A few weeks ago we had a terrible story of 14 children being killed when the Saudi Air Force dropped bombs on two girls' schools in Sana, the capital. That's just the latest of many similar atrocities on schools, hospitals, and civilians being hit as collateral damage in great numbers by the Royal Saudi Air Force. And there's the devastation in Yemen now since the war started back in 2015. I take the Chief Minister's point in his statement about the island being unable to prohibit this, and it's under an agreement with the UK, and of course the UK is responsible for the defence of the island. But I really don't see why an Isle of Man government statement or indeed a Tynwald resolution can't be put together voicing concern from the island, or concern and objection about how we feel. I mean, what does, you know, home rule for the island mean if we can't have a say on what goes on down at Ronald's Way Airport? The Isle of Man isn't just any UK county, and I think yes, emergency relief aid is welcome, as you've said, but we've got to do all in our power to prevent the suffering happening in the first place, to try to address the problem in our own small way as the cause of this, rather than just sticking plaster after the event.
Well, do you believe the Isle of Man government is actually capable of having an influence? I mean, the Celtic League have said they do believe that control of the airport does ultimately lie in the hands of the Department of Infrastructure, and therefore they may be able to prohibit certain pilots from certain air forces training there. I mean, do you think they should be taking a course of action like that?
Yes, I would have done. I mean, if there's one air force that we shouldn't be using Ronald's Way to help train at the moment, it's the Saudi Air Force. Given what's going on in the Yemen, you know, I can understand why we have to train our allies, and the Isle of Man's got a proud history of helping Allied air forces in the Second World War. But I think given what's going on in the Yemen, I think it leaves a very bitter taste in the mouth that Ronald's Way has been used by the RAF to train Saudi pilots, and I understand it's in the manoeuvres coming in to land and then taking off again without actually landing necessarily, but they're using Ronald's Way facilities, they're using Manx airspace, and I think, you know, it's very disturbing that's being used in the way it is being used by the Royal Saudi Air Force at the moment.
Do you also find it disturbing that, considering you've embarked on very numerous fundraising campaigns, you've had donations, of course, from the Manx government, and you've been getting money from the Manx public to support charities in the Yemen, do you think it's more disturbing that perhaps while you were doing this, unbeknownst to the public, training was ongoing for Saudi pilots over Manx airspace?
Yes, I do. I mean, I think the Isle of Man government's being very generous out of its aid budget in giving money to the Disasters Emergency Committee Yemen appeal. The One World Centre's been on the streets of five Manx towns in recent months to gather donations for the humanitarian side of the collateral damage that's been going on down in Yemen. So we've been fundraising the best we can to that, but it just makes it sort of to rub salt in the wounds when we find that Ronald's Way Airport is being used to prolong the war, and even, you know, to play one small cog in the wheel, maybe, of what's going on out there. You know, there's been concern voiced by politicians in Westminster too that we, you know, the RAF should not be out there while this war's going on, training Saudis.
Phil Crane, chairman of the One World Centre. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. A Douglas councillor is concerned there's been little improvement in the levels of curbside recycling in the capital. Of all the household waste disposed of by the council, around 7% is gathered by the street collection service, a figure Richie McNichol has described as a real problem. He's puzzled as to why more people in Douglas aren't taking up the curbside offer, despite a recent push at both local and national level to improve recycling levels across the island. The councillor explained his concerns to me.
I think it's important to say that the figures haven't moved much in the last 12 months, given all the information, the people who campaign for a better world. We all live in this world. Let's recycle more, please. I know it's not the same as putting things into the ocean, but eventually, if you throw away a plastic bottle, the chances are we live by rivers and they get washed away when it rains heavy and blown into the sea. We need to recycle more, not just plastics, but the paper, the cans, the glass need disposing of properly. And we, can I assure everybody out there, that we, the council, recycle all we collect on curbside.
Not incinerate.
Not incinerate, no. We recycle it all. We ship it away, which costs a lot of money, but it is recycled.
You've got the figures in front of us here for recycled materials by weight from, I believe, last April. Does it seem to not correspond to what's been going on, really? You haven't seen any great jumps in the numbers of people recycling or the volume of material being recycled.
No, you're absolutely right, Ewan. Curbside recycling represents about 7% of all household waste disposal. Now, it should be much higher than that, much higher than that. Last year, we disposed of the greatest tonnage was glass.
All the press we've had about plastic, and you're a bit disappointed that there hasn't been an uptake in the amount of plastic recycled.
In fact, it's gone down from a high of 5.23 tonnes in August last year to 4.87 in March. Even February is 4.84. And yet that's when we had the protests and people made aware of, like in Blue Planet 2 and things like that. And now they've just discovered plastic at the bottom of the Mariana Trench. So there is a problem there. And I don't think we're recycling enough.
So why do you think we aren't seeing changes in the figures?
It is a problem. They say education, but with all the reports that have been on TV and on the island in the newspapers and the young adults who left school to protest, you'd think that there'd be a build-up of people wanting to recycle. I mean, 86% of all households in Douglas can recycle. They have the ability to recycle, but only 35% of households choose to do that. Now, no doubt there are households who collect it and take it to a bring bank, but that still leaves a big gap.
Douglas Councillor Richie McNichol. Well, there'll be six fewer councillors representing Douglas next year after Tynwald approved an order last month to reduce the authority's membership. The council will now have 12 rather than 18 seats for the 2020 elections in a move that's been backed by, as we heard, local and national politicians. Well, the number of wards in the borough will also be cut from 6 to 4. This will match up with the constituencies used for national elections in the capital. I spoke to former councillor Anne Corlett, now a Douglas Central MHK, who's canvassed in both these new electoral boundaries. She gave me her views on the change.
I think it's a good thing. In fact, I proposed it originally, and this was agreed by the council when I was in there. I put a motion down for reduction of councillors and trying to even up the numbers in the constituency by changing the boundaries. The changing of the boundaries was accepted at that time, but the reduction of councillors was voted down. So actually that's been in place for a little bit longer. There are some challenges in the bigger areas. As a St George's ward councillor, the area to cover on foot is smaller, whereas central Douglas, it is quite expansive. It comes up to Douglas Head and out to Cuaig, apart from sort of more centrally in town. So yes, it takes longer to do. It takes more effort. If you're producing manifestos, you need more manifestos. So there are those challenges. But on the plus side, I think we all know where we are, which is a lot easier. Because I found that while I was canvassing, there was a lot of confusion as to what ward they were in, what constituency they were in. So I think that helps. I hope that it will make for more collaborative working between councillors and MHKs, because we're representing the same area, so we've got the same people in that area.
What was the experience like of canvassing as a councillor compared to canvassing as an MHK?
Actually, there wasn't a lot of difference, because when you're canvassing for to be an MHK, actually a lot of the issues are the same issues. Because people tend to, what's important to us is what's outside our door often enough. And they can be more council issues than national issues. Mm. So a lot of the sort of talk on the doorstep is the same. But then you do have to recognise, obviously, the bigger issues, the national issues.
So just with this change in the wards, are you concerned that there was a low turnout in the Derby ward by-election they had recently? I know that was a by-election. And then if you look at the turnout in the national election in Douglas East, was actually quite one of the lowest on the island. It seems odd that as Douglas, which is, you know, the centre of the island, the capital, the most highly populated town, that we get these low turnouts. Maybe that's representative of the population sometimes. But do you worry that the ward system being changed, we will lose perhaps communities like St George's, like... No, they will still be there, but they won't be reflected in an electoral sense. Do you worry that those communities might not be represented like they were under the changes? You'll just have Douglas East, Douglas Central. You know, it's they're big swathes of land, really.
Yeah, I think really it was more... I don't think we'll lose anything in that. And I think areas like South Douglas, I mean, had just grown so big anyway. And the difference between South Douglas Hills Ward and St George's Ward in numbers of people's voters was tremendous. So I think we had to do something to even it up. The choice was to do 2 members, 6 wards, or 3 members, 4 wards. It's got to be more cost effective to only have 4 wards, 4 elections. But as regards community, no, I don't think we'll lose anything in that.
So how about for those who might want to be a councillor? Will it cost them more to do a full canvas? Because we do know there are some people who stand for local authorities who don't go knocking on every single door, but there are those who choose to do so. Do you think you'll see a different kind of councillor coming forward? Or
no, I think you'll always find those who walk the streets and knock on doors and those who don't. Social media is a huge thing now and that reaches quite a lot of people. So it's really, I guess, what the individual likes to do. For me, I'm knock on doors, talk to people. Social media is not really my thing, but it's each to their own, isn't it? And I think there will still be people doing both.
Does it encourage certain types of people, say someone who's retired, someone who's got the
Absolutely.
Time?
Absolutely. I think that is, for me, has always been an issue, especially in Douglas, because we have daytime meetings for the council. That really precludes anybody who perhaps is not retired or younger and working full time, family commitments. That's really difficult. And you're right. Well, actually, getting out and walking the streets is time consuming.
In your experience in the council, it's the numbers now going from 18 to 12. David Christian had said to me before in an interview that it eats into a perception that Douglas was overgoverned by the number of councillors it had. Did you agree with that? Do you think people there's too many of you?
I did think there was too many, and that's why I've always believed we should have 12, not 18. I think it gives councillors, when they're elected, a chance to serve on more than one committee, which I think is really quite important because you get to know what's going on rather than just your one committee. But then once again, you're putting the emphasis on people who've got time to do that, which not everyone has. Yeah, I honestly do think, I've always believed the council can manage effectively and efficiently on 12 members.
Mm. And these new wards are very big areas, just like the constituencies for MHKs. Do you think people are aware of who their councillors are a lot of the time anyway? I mean, you were mentioning it to me before that the ward system we had before, people weren't even sure where they were sometime.
And they certainly are not sure. Mm.
Do you think this
will
help?
If you went around and asked, maybe it's more when people have a problem, they tend to look for who is representing them rather than knowing.
And do you think this match up with the national constituencies, do you think that will help people?
I think it will. Yeah, they'll identify where they are and hopefully who represents them.
And I know it's been said to me that the information will be easier to provide to people because you'll have a list of your councillors and your MHKs, not you've got these MHKs, these councillors, but under a different name. And the system
it just adds to confusion. One of the main reasons for me, this has been a long time coming, really. You know, it's been brought up time and again. But I think the final push perhaps was that at the last general election, not all the seats could be filled and we had to have by-elections. You know, that's a telling thing, isn't it? If you can't fill the seats, it really is time to.
I'm just curious, turnout is such a hard thing to address. Do you have any idea about how things can be made better and you can improve that?
No, I suppose really it's to some extent about us as candidates, as members, to get out as much as you can and talk to people, but that's not always easy, busy. I hoped last summer I would get out and walk around the constituency and knock on doors. I'm hoping this summer I'll get to it. Let's see.
Does it almost sometimes, when you see a really good turnout, it's because there's a big issue on the table? Does it depend
on
what?
Yeah, I think, it's either about a big issue or sometimes you see a bigger turnout for a more popular candidate. But I think, issues do bring people out to vote.
So in the same vein, you could argue then that Douglas is happy?
I don't know, really. That
perhaps not.
We can only do our best, and if it takes people to tell us what's wrong, sometimes we don't always know. So it is trying to keep that communication between constituents and yourself, really, which is hard when you've got lots of jobs going on at the same time and spinning so many plates in the air.
Douglas Central MHK and Call It. That's all from tonight's programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda next week, and you can listen again to this episode online as a podcast. But for now, Gurumayu, and have a good evening.